Lil, put aside the ego and embrace the moment.
It's time for another midweek drive transcontinental adventure.
The Greek guru of well-being and natural beauty. One of the top 50 well-being gurus in London. Of course, we're just looking back at the early part of the 21st century. Now, of course, the whole world of Diana Zupas has taken a whole leap forward, a giant leap forward, as she's moved over to embrace the whole Austrian experience. We are more than happy to actually welcome back to the Midweek Drive, it's Diana Zupas. How are you, Diana?
Hi, I'm really, really well. Thank you for having me. It's really an honor to be back after so many years, and it feels like home.
Well, exactly. You know, the only difference between here and now is basically it's only mental. I mean, as Einstein once said, the most persistent of illusions is that past, present, and future are separate entities. So on one level, we're probably still actually going to that wonderful Sloan Square fundraising evening event for the Galapagos Island Turtles, which was a long time ago, but still, Liz Brewer still remembers it. So that's important. So that's good.
Exactly.
So, Diana, share with us in terms of you're in Klagenfurt now. Obviously, originally from Greece, you were obviously one of London's key high Reiki practitioners early in the production. We'll be joined, say, by Chloe Rose, hopefully, as well, who was very excited when I said that you're going to be on the programme. How is it sort of panning out? I mean, are people seeking your treatments more and more? Is it a case of, in the 21st century, the pace of life continues to quite literally get stronger and stronger, or is it just a case of, well, you know, quality will always out?
Well, to be honest with you, people need Reiki now more than ever. And I was very surprised how the Austrians were so open to it, because usually people think that the Austrians are a very conservative nation. People are very much kept to themselves. But when it comes to looking deep into them, they're very, very open. And they have this really nice understanding of the holistic, which is exactly my line of work, to bring the mind, body, spirit in line and to really look beyond the day-to-day activities, but how can I look after myself and my soul and my inner interests? You know, who am I? Where do I want to go? How do I want to self-develop? And it has been a hit, my Reiki treatments and my crystal healing treatments. Here in Klagenfurt, out of all places, it's quite a small town. I'm fully booked. I have no space anymore. And people travel from all over Austria to come to me, which I find it so sweet that, you know, they like to come to me. And now with the pandemic, people do need the support even more, because they feel very enclosed. They feel very lonely. There's a lot of fear, insecurity about the future. And what better way to find peace other than just look into yourself and build up your own inner defense mechanism? So I'm busier than ever.
And that, of course, takes us back to really where we connected and really at the start of this century, that whole notion that you speak about holistic therapy, you speak about the treatments that are actually there. It's almost as though, again, the cosmos, the universe was kind of putting that whole thing together, because there are more than ever, as you rightly said, the need for people to actually take that time to reflect on their own experiences and indeed sort of ensure that they can actually progress accordingly.
Exactly. It's there are two ways of looking at this pandemic. You know, you either go really depressed and negative and you think, oh my God, the end of the world is coming, or you take it really up to you to really make yourself feel special. It's a time of reflection. It's a time of slowing down. It's a time of finding the positive in you. And we all have it. Nobody's perfect. We all have our negative days and our positive days. But when we slow down the pace of living a little bit and we realize what is the most valuable virtues and principles that we have, it can be completely a new opening to our life and our future. So I see the whole thing very positive.
Which is absolutely essential. So it goes back to the days where on another studio, we used to use those healthy alternative fares, and Cavalier Cosmetics was actually there in full force.
Exactly.
We have been joined, as promised, by our ace singer-songwriter now, trainee teacher, Chloe Rose, who's based in Cleethorpes, which is on the east coast of the country. Chloe, how are you?
Hello, I'm very good, thank you. And I'm excited, actually. I'm very excited about this Zoom call today. I'm intrigued in Reiki as it is, so I'd love to hear lots.
So there you have it, Diana. As promised, Chloe Rose, very excited about the very mention. I mean, I've never seen her respond so positively to a Facebook message when I said that you were going to be on the program. So Diana, for the benefit of Chloe, and indeed other listeners as well from that point of view, just talk us through what Reiki is and how it can affect and how it impacts on us for our well-being.
Okay. Chloe, first of all, welcome. It's nice to meet you. And I'm so excited as well that you're so much into Reiki. And I will explain it as quickly as I can. Reiki yes. is basically the life force that we have. It's this energy that's inside every one of us, but it's also the energy that the universe sends us. So we're not just alone here. We're interconnected with the energies of the universe and the energy of each other. So it's like an inner vibration. And what we keep forgetting is that Reiki is something that is already installed in our bodies. So the body itself can self-heal. It's almost like this thing that when you go to bed, you wake up in the morning and you see more eyebrows, and then your hair is longer and your nails are longer, and you think like, what's happening? Why is everything growing on me? Or you have a scratch somewhere and after a couple of weeks, you don't see it anymore. Your cells keep repairing and keep rebuilding. And this is all like an electromagnetic field that it's over us, that looks after us. And this is not something which a lot of people think is very hocus pocus and magic. It's actual science. You know, these energies do exist. We all carry a specific electromagnetic field in us. We all have these positive and negative ions. We're all energetic beings. And when you're constantly in a negative field, you're going to feel like, oh, I'm exhausted, I'm tired. You will attract negativity. But as soon as someone comes through to this Reiki field and gives you this love, attention, care, living in the moment, enjoying, paying attention to what matters, you can immediately and very quickly start changing your own sense of well-being. So Reiki is a tool for our daily life. It's not just something that someone invented, you know, it has been around for thousands of years like we are. We just have it in sleep mode, so to speak. It's like in the computer, but we don't activate it because we have a tendency to think negative. We all are a little bit of drama queens, and we have a tendency to concentrate more on our anxiousness and on our, you know, disasters, the film that plays in our heads, and not on our ability to actually self-heal, self-repair, and the strength that we all have as people. And this is like Reiki, the kind of like ability to rebirth, to reconstitute, to renovate. And we can do it on our own once we're a little bit more trained. Or we can have someone like me, a Reiki master, who puts their hands over the body and activates the aura. And the aura is this like etheric body. It's like a second layer. Think of it like a cocoon where you're all kind of like nice and fluffy in there. That's why I'm always wearing white fluffy jumpers. but you feel like you're in a cloud and someone cuddles you. And it's a very nice feeling, like you belong to yourself and you give love. Reiki is love. You cannot heal or change yourself or anybody unless you open your heart and all your chakras and bring the love in there.
And Diana, as you're well aware, that's pretty much how we based the entire Midweek Drive specialist on back in the 20th century when we first connected with each other. So there you go. From that time as well, of course, Sarah Huntley has joined us. How are you, Sarah? I say from that time, you're not a time traveller, but how are your fluffy centres today, Sarah?
Oh, just listening to that, I'm feeling fluffier.
Me too.
Hi, Sarah. Good to see you again.
Yes, because of course, Sarah, do you remember the time when you met up with Diana in London back in the day, the early part of this 21st century?
I do. Yes, I do. Yes.
You see, just proving that you could always be part of the Midweek Drive team, as indeed Jessica Burtis is proving over in North Carolina. Now, Jessica, you're in your final year. You're listening to Diana sort of talking about that. Do you think there's a need for Diana Zupas's treatments in the United States of America?
Oh, of course. I think we always have positivity. I think that sounds like exactly what it is. And I think especially with, you know, what's going on right now, we really...
We need to send you a big wave of Reiki energy over to heal all this craziness of the negativity that's happening at the moment.
Please. I really
and, need it. You know, this is actually what a lot of us, the Reiki Masters, do. We have our regular kind of like meetings, pretty much not necessarily like Zoom, but we have a tendency to agree on a specific time where we can all sit in meditation and we can all send over positive energies, positive vibrations, positive thoughts, and we really send the healing energy all over the world when it's needed. And it's nice to feel that I belong in this great group of people who are thinking a little bit more than just themselves.
Well, I think it's fair to say that the Trump family might well need some assistance, and I think the Johnsons as well probably need some help as well. Or maybe that's just the rest of us. I don't know. Sarah, question for yourself.
Oh, well, I just feel inspired. In my little way, what I do is I light candles for people. Just it's a positive. I'm a great one believer in positive vibes. And I think you've taken us all to a place where you go, oh, instead of having the worst case scenario happen, let's think about what the best case scenario happen. And I'm afraid, as an old actress, I usually think, hang on, what's the worst? And then it can't be as bad as that. That's kind of my, I think Alexis is a bit the same as me. So I'm fascinated by this. I've just had a day off today, which is why I look like I do, no makeup or anything. And I've been, it, kind of my Reiki day, I've been making my fridge an Italian fridge. So I thought, I wish I was in Sicily. I wish I was in Italy. So I've done all Italian food for the rest of the week, all in the fridge.
Sounds lovely.
What I was going to say was, do you practice Reiki every day?
I do. I practice Reiki, first of all, on me every day, because Reiki is like a self-healing practice, but also on my clients. And you can only bring over this positive healing energy to others once you're really well-grounded and positive yourself. Because I'm also a human being. I'm also a mom and a wife and a businesswoman, and I have a lot of things going on. So you have to really learn how to switch your mind off, how to let go of your problems, your day-to-day, and go into this zone of positivity where you don't exist anymore as a person. You just are there like an energy bubble. Mm-hmm. And you go over the energy of your clients, and you wrap them into this love bubble where they just feel your good vibrations and the heat of the hands, you know, the energy. And you really transfer over this deep unconditional love. When I really have my hands over people, all I think of is I ask the universe to give them the gifts that they deserve through me. So I'm like a channel of light, a channel of energy that everything through the universe can go over me, can be washed and filtered over and passed on through my hands to the other people with a lot of tender love and care.
How do you cope with days where, I'm sure it's the same for everyone listening and for my other friends on Zoom. What do you do though when you've got a day where you might have to be working from 7 o'clock in the morning right through to 7 to 8 o'clock at night, and you haven't got a window of opportunity to do that?
Well, I always make sure that I give enough time for myself after every treatment to close down this connected channel of energy between my client and me, with specific rituals where I clean my energy. Of course, open windows, open doors, even with -7, I'm always with open windows and doors, with big scarves, you know, covering my neck that I don't freeze. So I can breathe the fresh air. And it's all a very mental processing to really switch off from the energy of one person and tell my own being that these problems, these issues that someone transferred over, they're not mine, and they are sent out there to the universe to be healed and sorted, and I have done my best to support them. I'm like a recycling machine. It's like I take from people all the negatives that they don't need. I kind of like process it through my own body, through my own aura and my chakras, and then I earth it back to the ground. That's why I work barefoot the whole day in freezing temperatures as well. And then I kind of like regroup my strength and I say to myself, okay, that was not my story. Now I need to prepare myself for the next person. And it's only late in the evening that I find Diana back again, where I think, okay, can I come back to Earth now and be with my family?
No surprise that we're featuring you this week, Diana, on the same time as Wonder Woman 1984 has been released across the whole sort of online on-demand system. It's very important. Jessica, turning to you, good self, I obviously circulated some material about Diana's story and various other things. Have you got any questions you want to throw over to Klagenfurt in Austria, given that Diana's originally from Greece and has worked in New York, London, Athens, and so on? Over to you, Jessica.
Yeah, I thought that was incredible that you've lived in so many different places and gotten to work there. I think that's absolutely amazing. Has your practice changed from time to time as you've moved?
It has changed depending on the cultural needs of people, because you have different tendencies in a really big city or different problems, and then come into a smaller place like Klagenfurt. You need some time to adjust and understand people's issues. But to be honest with you, everybody needs this feeling that they can come somewhere where they feel safe, secure, pampered and special. And maybe, I don't know, a trader in New York or a hedge fund manager is really stressed out because, I don't know, he's losing millions. And a lady in Klagenfurt, I don't know, lost a cow or something. But you cannot judge why the problem is bigger or smaller. It's the way that people feel. And deep down, a lot of people suffer from the same condition. It's like, I'm not good enough, or I don't have enough appreciation in my life, or I don't have enough time for myself, or the issue that I just have too many packages on my shoulders that I carry. And how do I multitask? How can I do my best of what is required of me? And this is pretty much the same syndrome, let's say, in a small society and in a bigger society as well. For me personally, the hardest thing was the language when I first came here, because I didn't speak any German before I came in Austria. And now I can proudly say 8 years down the line that I'm really fluent and everybody can understand me. But at the beginning, even without the language, the energy worked. I was able to help people with quite a lot of sign language to explain to them what was happening. But the
Presumably, Ausgezeichnet is just this, you know, Ausgezeichnet, you know, wave the hands, like jazz hands, but in a Reiki sense.
Yeah, it's to be honest with you, it's magic how it works. When someone needs to find the way to me, they do find it. I've never really advertised or, I don't know, talked about myself, especially here. And people always found me. When they need the help, it's like the universe sends them to me.
Or indeed, you contacted us back in the day through a wonderful lady called Minty, which is marvellous. Minty's still going there. Chloe, you've been listening to that, and clearly you're multitasking. Yeah. You've got your teaching career that you're kicking off. You're doing the online stuff there. You've got your musical career. Any questions from yourself?
I just think, like, what you do as a job, it's just incredible. You know, you are a light worker as such. You do, you know, you heal people, and that's your role on Earth. And I just think that's amazing. Like, I love things like this. It really intrigues me. And I'm wondering how your journey started. You know, when did you realize you had that gift to help others like that? I'm so intrigued.
Well, that's quite a long story. I think I always had the gift ever since I was a kid, but I was not aware, or I was probably scared to admit it, because when you're young and you feel like you're attracted to the energies and you walk into a room and you can feel and sense the goodness and the badness in people, everybody thinks you're just an eccentric kid. And this is what my parents thought at the beginning. Like, she has feelings about everybody. And opinions about everybody, according to the feeling. And I never really took it seriously, but other people saw it in me. And that was interesting. But I still was very stubborn and I wanted to study law, which I did. And I was fixated on maritime law, which I did. And I was working in London as a maritime lawyer. And then one day I walked into a bookshop in London and I thought, I need to know more about self-help, you know, like, what can I do to make myself feel better? How can I open my heart to things? I just didn't want to be like the strict lawyer, you know, in a square and all logic. And I had too much heart for what I was doing. And suddenly a Reiki book fell in my hands. And I think that was really a point in time that the universe was telling me, this is where you need to go. And after I read that book, I couldn't put it down. I went to my boss, I asked for a sabbatical. I really wanted to go to Asia, which I did. I went to Japan. I met my first Reiki masters there. I studied with them. I started my travel around Asia because obviously this is the birth point of Reiki. And I wanted to live it with the people themselves who were practicing because as a lawyer, I couldn't fit it in my head. It was all too bubbly and, you know, out there. And I thought, if they can convince me that this thing works in my square logic, then it has to work. And when I felt it in me, the changes in me, when I started putting the love and the focus and the really in the moment sensation and believing in the capacity of my body, what I could do for myself, then I was completely, wow. It was a fantastic sensation. And I thought, okay, I need to show the world how this goes. And then I carried on to China, and then I was in Indonesia, and then I was in Brazil because I wanted to learn all the different techniques that combine with Reiki, like the different massages and also the crystals completely fascinated me. And I spent a long time in Brazil learning about every crystal. And again, language barrier, I didn't speak any Portuguese in Brazil, but it was just the words from the heart. You know, I was connecting with every other healer. And a lot of people saw it in me and they said, you have it in you, you have the gift, but it took me some years to believe in it, to be honest with you. And now it's 20 years down the line and I have been doing this now for 20 years, day in, day out, and I love it.
So, Sarah, I mean, for a moment there, I thought you were getting transcendental on us and actually just beginning to levitate from your own perspective. But, I mean, listening to that, I'm just thinking, what a wonderful cinematic story that is. I mean, you can see the narrative now. A hard-bitten maritime lawyer does her studies at the University of London, sorted out for that part of you, and then basically how does she actually battle with that tension with her clients, who she knows if she actually says, by the way, have you tried Reiki? And they'll say, what, love? And there's our bits and pieces. There's got to be a story there, hasn't there?
Yeah, I think that the type, the working title we could go with is The Lifted Spirit. You know, I think it's perfect. Yeah, absolutely.
Sounds lovely.
Is there an autobiography in the works, Diana?
Well, you know, Alex, a lot of people have been asking me, and I think I should do it at some point, but I don't have the time, and I don't know. I need to find someone who can ghostwrite it for me.
Well, Jessica's going to graduate very shortly. She'll have her writing routine. This is an opportunity.
Jessica, call Jessica. Please.
Let's get started.
Perfect. That would be fantastic. I should write a book. And, you know, I have started quite a bit. You know, I'm writing because I love writing. But always something happens. A next turning point in life happens. And I put it to the side. I don't know, between having a child and moving countries and trying to learn a new language and, you know, being a new businesswoman for here, it's like, I don't know, I didn't have the time to carry on with my book. So yes, if any volunteers are out there, I'm happy to do it.
Jessica, any questions you'd like to put to somebody you might be writing their ghost autobiography for? Over to you, Jessica.
Yeah. With the pandemic happening, have you had to kind of alter how you do things, or has it, you know, have you realized that there's more people with a lot more stress because of the pandemic?
Yes, I actually came up with a new concept like 3 weeks ago, which I call it walk and talk, because of the lockdowns.
At the same time, Diana, that's unbelievable. Walking and talking at the same time.
Wow. You can walk and talk at the same time. Because I realized that a lot of my clients, especially the younger people who have been living in really small apartments with just, I don't know, one window, no balcony, no family, no garden, that they were very much into the social interaction with just colleagues and not with friends, because especially young men who have been living alone and they only thought, okay, my apartment is just like a hotel. I don't bother to decorate. I don't bother to hang any pictures around. I wake up in the morning, I grab a coffee.
There's nothing wrong with a tartan rug. That's all you need.
Yeah, I know. But, you know, as long as it makes you happy. But there are other people who are not happy because they're missing the interaction with the world. So for this kind of group, and I have a lot of these young men, I thought, okay, if I'm not allowed through the restrictions to work with everybody in close contact, then we can go out there. We have a beautiful lake where I am, the Wörthersee. We can walk for an hour around the lake and you have this most amazing postcard scenery with the snow to the water and the sun shining. It's beautiful. And they can talk to me. At least they can open up. They can release some of the stress and loneliness and the emotional, closeness that they feel and the depression that they go into. And that really has a healing effect to the soul. And because I'm very sensitive to the energies, I can still feel their aura and try to wash out all the negativity that they're experiencing. So I had to really become very innovative and improvising in this time, because the Austrian government is thinking that maybe our lockdown is going to go until Easter. So
standard practice. Now, Diana, I feel as though one other sort of aspect of the pandemic has been its unifying aspects, that whereas obviously there were certain folk who quite arguably sort of were keen for the Brexit process to take place, we're still connected with the continent through, of course, the pandemic, which is nice, or not as the case may be. But what, from your own perspective, as somebody who's obviously born in Greece, studied in London, living and working now, obviously, in Austria, etc. What's been the vibe that you've been picking up on? Was it a case of when the result was that took place a few years ago now, did you think, these people, they're insane? Do you think, oh, bless them, they're just doing their own island thing? What are your thoughts?
It's a mixture of both, to be honest with you. There are people who said to me, these British are completely crazy, you know, they still think they're an empire and they're all on their island.
You mean we're not?
But and there is another part of Austrians who said to me, well, we do understand them, you know, they have been kind of like inundated by so many foreigners, you know, including myself, and they kind of like want to shut down a little bit and stick to themselves and keep it nice and cozy and warm.
It's a pity the Romans ever came on board. That's my thought, but what the heck? And I speak from Irish and Polish backgrounds.
So to be honest with you, I can see both sides. Personally, I was petrified because I love London and I still have a home there and I still have loads of friends. And I'm now thinking, what am I going to do next time I have to come over? Do I need a visa or what shall I do? Plus, I miss all the stuff that I used to order from London. I still have my favorite shops in London, things that I would always get sent over. And now I'm thinking, do I have to pay more by the time they arrive here? It's also complicated. That's, yeah.
Well, if it helps, I'm sure Sarah will tell you they're planning the same thing for Cornwall as well when Cornwall declares independence, and that'll be another separate. But what thoughts would you have for Diana there? Somebody who, we love Diana in London, she's part of the whole thing, but now she's barred. Stay away.
Exactly. I don't think you're barred. I think all it's going to take, it's like veins going through a body, and what has happened in this country is there'll be a passage that finds the way, the blood circulation through the veins, but it's just going to take a bit more time. And then once it gets going, those circuits happen, we'll be back to normal. I'm not getting political. I never, ever wanted Brexit. I never voted for it, as I speak for most people, I think. But the point is, we can't go back. We've got to go forward. And we will go forward. And we're going forward. And you can't, I do think it's a very divisive thing in this country, and it always will be, but it's negative to say, what did you vote? The point is, we're in the situation we're in, and we've got to go forward. It's like the pandemic. We've got to go forward, and we are.
Exactly.
And at least this country, actually, for once, for once, I think I may be right in thinking it's diabolical in other levels, but I think we're up there with the rest of Europe with getting vaccinated at the moment. So that's something to be grateful for.
Whether, and of course, it works is another issue, but that's another by the by.
Let's just... There'll be loads of it. But as Ian Drury said, you know, reasons to be cheerful. There's at least three. I think we can think of.
Three vaccines. I say one from Oxford, one from AstraZeneca, and a third one that's sort of emerged.
Three vaccines. As our fellow friend here from the USA will say, just because the politics are coming out of that country, that does not represent us as human beings in this country at all. And I think...
Is that true, Jessica? You mean you weren't in favour of actually storming Washington and actually climbing up to the White House with your Republican flag from North Carolina?
Yeah, I think I agree with Sarah quite a lot. I think that people see this, you know, they'll see this group doing something and they assume that that's like a representation of all of the people of an entire place. And I think that we do that of everywhere, but it's not representative of the actual people who live there. Most countries are full of very diverse opinions and beliefs. And so it's very important to remember that, I think.
And indeed, Towns, it's fair to say that, Chloe, not everybody in Cleethorpes is a singer, songwriter and teacher, are they?
Well, that's very true. But everybody's good at what they're good at. You know, we've all got different gifts, such as Diana. Her gifts to help people, you know, through Reiki. Mine could be through music. You know, there's lots of different things. We've all got our string to a bow, haven't we? So we can all help in some way. But honestly, I've absolutely loved this. This has been ace, this Zoom call. I just wanted, could I ask one more question to Diana? It would just be, you know, sort of what's one of your, sort of during your career, what was sort of the key moment for you, the most memorable moment of something that you've helped somebody, or like, how did it feel? Or I'd love to know more, basically. Excited.
There have been so many, you know what? I've been collecting a lot of the messages and cards and texts that I'm receiving from clients, which have really brought me to tears. How grateful people are when they feel in connection with their inner self. Because the problem with all of us is that we're running very busy lives with all sorts of problems and craziness in the world, regardless of the pandemic or I don't know what's happening in our own private world. And when you suddenly feel in peace with yourself, it's an incredible mind-blowing sensation that you have finally made connection with you. And this is the point where sometimes people write incredible reviews. I don't know, there's a website here in Austria which is called Gut gemacht, and that means like well done. So it's gutgemacht.at. So if you are fluent in German and you go and read what they write about me, I'm like always with a tissue. Like the people write like, I have changed their life. I have opened up completely new ways of feeling and seeing. And I never expected this, especially from the Austrians, to be honest with you, because...
Well, they did give birth to Adolf Hitler, of course, so that's another line entirely. Well, so, you know, they've obviously turned it round since those days, which is important.
Exactly. He was not a very positive human being, and definitely not an emotional one, for sure. Yeah. Yeah. And to get this kind of heartfelt comments and gratefulness from people here, that has really touched me. And I really felt that somehow the universe pushed me to come to this country. It's like the angels were opening the way because the people here needed the help, this connection at a deeper level, because they're conservative and because they are quite hard, you know, they're hardworking, they're very demanding, they're very closed. And somehow comes someone like me who's all fluff and love and, you know, much more fluid. And it's like I broke through a stone wall. And it still touches me when someone calls me and they ask, you know, that they want to come and see me. I can never say no. It's a lovely feeling.
Fluff and Love could be a whole new double act, which we could set up with, basically, with yourself and Sarah. It could be Fluff and Love, just a thought there. Or indeed, Chloe and Jessica. Interesting, of course, a few weeks ago, we were speaking to Angela Cartwright, who was one of the original actresses who portrayed one of the Von Trapp family singers in The Sound of Music. How close are you to the sound of the Sound of Music area there, Diana? Or were you not a Sound of Music fan as a child?
Oh, I was definitely a Sound of Music fan, but I'm quite far away. I think I'm around 5 hours away from there because Klagenfurt is on the very south side. To give you an idea, if you go north 3 hours, you're in Vienna. If you go south 3 hours from Klagenfurt, you're in Venice. So we have a lot of the Italian flair that's coming to us, whereas the Sound of Music area is more Tyrol, which is like 5 hours, 5.5 hours away from us.
Well, but, having confidence in me is one of Julie Andrews' classics. It's almost as much bringing me to tears as when Sarah Huntley sends me a birthday card with L'chaim on, which is very nice. You know, it's very good, very impressive. I shall cherish that, Sarah. We'll get another scenario.
I think, have we all said happy birthday to Alexius?
It was Diana's birthday as well. We exchanged it. It's because of our acknowledging our Facebook birthday things there that we thought, Diana, it's been 10 years. It's time you came back.
Yay! It feels like a reunion, and you're my favorite Capricorn anyhow, so. Oh.
Well, they're your favorite Capricorn, Alex. And Alex, I'm taking you to the Ivy once it opens. Once we get out of this, that it'll, you know, nice meal. Birthday in January.
Yeah, I mean, Chloe, I believe, is a Gemini soul. Jessica, where do you fulfil on the grand scheme of star signs and such like?
My birthday's in July, so I'm a Cancer crab.
Perfect. Finally, Diana, have you got any questions you'd like to put to Chloe, Jessica, or indeed Sarah? We put you on the spot very much today. Have you got any sort of things you'd like to sort of throw at them in terms of, this is what I want to know?
Well, Chloe, first, I start with you because I see you on a row on my screen. So
you can change the gallery settings, Diana. I've changed it around, so we've done various other bits and pieces there, so it's all good.
I'm really not that good with Zoom. I'm still learning. So, Chloe, what is your favorite music? Because I understood that you're writing and singing, and, you know, which song makes you happy?
Which song makes me happy? Oh, I love all sorts of music, really. I absolutely love singers like Amy Winehouse. I don't know if you might have heard of her. She's amazing.
Oh, yes.
Oh, incredible. And the story behind it all, you know, I don't know if have you ever watched the documentary on her?
Yes.
Oh, it's so...
She was a very talented travel soul.
Yeah, she was. She was, wasn't she? And I love all kinds of music, but definitely pop music. I quite like the film type of music as well, and easy listening music I quite like. I like all sorts of things, but I'd say Songbird, that's a beautiful song, Eva Cassidy. Mm-hmm. It's lovely. But I just love music in general, and hopefully I can make people happy, I'm hoping. You know, by bringing some music out. Like yourself, you're doing great things, so keep doing it.
I'm thinking maybe, Diana, when Chloe releases her latest single, which is coming around in a few weeks' time, I believe, we can maybe invite you back on to actually sort of share your thoughts on Chloe's latest entry into the singing songwriting world, which is fine.
Absolutely, I would love that.
Oh, thank you. That'd be lovely.
Sarah, I'm going to turn to you now because it falls to your good self to throw those last two questions. Jessica has still got a third Zoomer today. She's already done one of these sessions. This is her second. Up next, she'll be speaking to Annette Andre in San Diego, Rupert Baker in the London area, Graham Harper, director we know well, of course, and I think Diana knows as well from the point of view of our BAFTA award-winning days. So over to you, Sarah, for those last two questions.
Have you had an interesting link?
Of course, always with Alex and his wonderful ladies, always.
Now, they're not my ladies. I'm just let's get that straight. I mean, these are individual women who have their own sort of rights and are good communicators primarily. You know,
feeling here.
Yes, James Bond, 007.
I'm definitely Miss Moneypenny Girls. I think you two.
Yeah, that's fine. We'll go with that.
You go, yes.
Yes.
And the next question, Sarah?
Will you be coming back again?
Absolutely. Now that we've found each other again, I'm here anytime you want.
Good.
Well, it seems that January the 3rd isn't just a memorable day for the fact that it was my birthday, but it also apparently was identified as the busiest day and time for online dating, according to recent research, with Single Sunday, as it was referred to, seeing sign-ups increasing by 45% from average. Well, I suppose we're getting used to the new normal, and IRL in real life might be cast to the history books, or will it? Who better to actually talk us through this than our ace expert when it comes to dating, and indeed generally advice with respect to the whole minefield of dating in general. We're delighted to welcome dating coach extraordinaire once again. It's Hayley Quinn. How are you, Hayley?
Oh, I'm good. Thank you very much for having me, Alex.
Always a delight, Hayley. Now, this particular aspect, I mean, clearly we are now getting used to the fact that we're communicating like this, really, like Zoom, sometimes with vision on, sometimes with vision off. It's a different line entirely, but, you know, it's all part and parcel of that rich tapestry. Clearly, there are other social networking sites, FaceTime, I'm hearing a great deal that's being used quite a lot, and so on. But, I mean, is it just a case of we're now waiting for the next leap forward in technology, which is basically we need those virtual
holograms.
Yeah, holograms as well. That's what your reality do. Is that what we're really looking for?
Well, I hope not. You know, I hope that we're going to, you know, that this new normal will eventually pass. We'll be able to, you know, get back to actually meeting up with people in person at some point. But for now, what we can say is after we had to look at some recent research from dating site Match, it showed that January, not just January 3rd was a real bumper day. But the whole of January has actually been the busiest month for dating. So right now we're in peak online dating traffic time of the year. So despite all of this current circumstances, it does show that people are still really motivated to get out there and meet people. And yes, that does mean a lot of what we call zoomancing, which is video dates.
Yeah, and not obviously just showing photographs of animals in a local zoo, but still, that's another line entirely. I know there are people who might be tuned into this and thinking, what? Where's it all about? Zoom fatigue was something which was an interesting term that I suppose it is, though. I mean, is it that case that after that initial excitement of, oh, it's new technology, shiny new technology, we can use this to actually talk to people, ultimately you say, look, I can only take so many Zoom parties before that's it, I am zoomed out.
Look, I'm not denying that people might be Zoom partied out and online quizzed out at the moment, and they may be struggling to have a bit of that motivation to keep putting themselves out there. But I do think within the current confines of what we're allowed to do within our four walls, actually having a conversation with someone sometimes does make a big difference in terms of how you feel about your day. And I also think that as part of dating in general, I think this zoomancing thing could be here to stay, and I think actually 18% of people surveyed said the same thing, that even if we're, you know, COVID is a distant terrible memory, that they're going to keep going with the video dating thing. And the reason for that is because I think it adds a really nice sort of compatibility test in, dare I call it that, before you would then sort of commit to meeting somebody in person, investing your time on a date with them.
I suppose the whole notion of let's face the music and zoomance could be rewritten for the whole world, really. It's a different line. The other side of things, of course, I suppose, is this notion that human beings being what they are, somewhat kind of concerned in all sorts of ways, we'd be looking to, before you actually do meet anybody in real life, you might need to actually have a certificate to actually prove that you've actually been vaccinated. Will that be happening as well?
Oh, well, I don't know if we'll be, you know, showing our certificates of vaccination towards one another, but they did say in the East Midlands, actually, particularly, that 33% of people said they prefer to date someone who had been vaccinated against COVID-19. So that is something that is on people's minds. And I think, obviously, we can't be reliant on the vaccine. We have to, I think, for now, just work with what tools we have available, even if we feel slightly limited by them. And I would say to people out there, if you are looking to meet someone, within the current confines of what we can do, if you know that lots of people, new people are joining online dating right now, it's probably quite a good time to have a bit of a spring clean of your profile, maybe get some new photos taken. I'm sat down here in front of my computer at the moment with a nice light ring shining at me. That's another really smart thing to get if you want to grab some new photos. And to also think about how you can kind of double down and put a bit more effort in, whether that's being the person who sends the first message, even if you haven't maybe done that too much in the past, or how you can write really high quality messages to people so that you give yourself the best chance of actually connecting with them rather than defaulting to cut and paste.
Interesting to see that the survey also reveals that 18% is the number that people will say they continue to use Zoom as a way to test the waters, as you mentioned, actually, Hayley. That presumably means that, as with all of these kind of innovations, they'll kind of be adapted and amalgamated into the ways in which we can.
Yeah, I really think that whilst I'm not going to deny there's been obviously quite a few negatives to the pandemic, and I think for probably lots of people I said who were sat here this time last year in 2020, you know, thinking, oh, this is probably my year to find love, they might have been a little bit disappointed with the year that unfolded. However, I do think that some of the adaptations, as you said, that we've made are actually going to be useful for us to continue forwards with, even after, fingers crossed, this is all behind us. So I think adding that extra courtship step in of having a phone call or video call is actually quite good to test compatibility, because I think rather than just messaging someone, I think you get a much better sense of if you have a click, if you speak to them. I think the flow of the conversation is a really good checkpoint for that. And the other thing I think that we'll probably keep going with a bit as well is obviously COVID has inevitably made the whole dating process largely slow down, because we haven't just been able to run out the door and, you know, go on a dinner date or grab a drink with someone. We've had to instead go through a longer process of messaging, speaking and building up that connection over time. And I whilst it might not be quite so exciting, I don't think that's all bad news. If you are looking for, you know, a really serious relationship, to spend time putting those building blocks in place and really getting to know someone.
I suppose it's the equivalent of ensuring that if you have too many clicks on the whole thing, you might need to check your buffering, because obviously that's not going to help if you haven't got a decent broadband side of things. But equally, as I'm sure you confirm, Hayley, that my campaign a few years ago to get everybody to actually wear hazmat suits, that's not going to take up either. You know, just a thought. I'm looking at HayleyQuinn.com. I love the sort of notion as top dating coach for men and women. You've got a blue button for dating for men, a pink button for dating for women, which is wonderful. And in terms of the sort of change from your own work, is this something where you've also adapted and embraced the technology to actually ensure that actually, you know, as you said, you've got a light ring, you've got various other things within that. Is it something which you think, yes, this is finally the 21st century making itself felt, in which the computer can actually serve the line of being a virtual concierge, a kind of a virtual sort of person who's actually around there as an escort on the date?
Well, you know what? I still like, and I think most people still like, the idea of actually meeting a date in person, and, you know, looking forward to some time in the future where we can.
You're such a traditionalist, Hayley. Such a traditionalist.
I'm a traditionalist. I'm so you're not selling me on the hologram yet. That being said, I think that some of these adaptations that we have had to do to try and build a sense, I guess, of community and connection, even when we're not able to meet one another in person, I think those have been actually really valid ways that we've managed to, you know, keep our spirits up. I know Match as well is does a music quiz every Tuesday night for their members to join in on, and does a kind of virtual speed dating. And I think these small glimmers of hope are what give us the motivation to just keep going a little bit longer until hopefully we pop out of the other side of this pandemic, and then we're able to have a more well-rounded dating life, which, yes, still has some of those more traditional elements of actually being able to see each other in person coming back again.
And presumably Match.com is the best place to go to find out further details about this particular survey and more.
Yes, exactly. And as I said, online dating, you know, is really booming at the moment. So if you've been kind of thinking about dipping your toe back in the water with that, now could be a good time to go for it.
I still like to say HayleyQuinn.com is wonderful. Be very careful, though. We said this before, Hayley. Of course, you don't want to go Harley Quinn, otherwise you'll find baseball bats and all sorts of things out there.
Yeah, something slightly different.
Yeah, precisely. Exactly. So, and we're not referring to each other as puddings, because that's a different line entirely. So that's all good. Hayley, two final questions. I think you know what they are. Have you had a reasonably interesting Zoomer with us on the programme today?
I've had a very interesting Zoomer. Thank you very much.
So the next critical question is, Hayley, will you return sometime in 2021? Will you come back?
Oh, I would love to.
Hayley Quinn, many thanks indeed. Take care now.
My pleasure. Take care, Alex. Bye.
Well, we've recently heard the news, of course, that the meals that are being distributed to children living in food poverty aren't up to spec. So it's obviously pretty good news that actually a supermarket has pledged to donate 10 million meals to families facing hunger, with the support, of course, of Marcus Rashford. And to talk us through some of the effective ways in which Aldi is actually collaborating with them to actually assist in this very laudable aim, we're delighted to welcome the Chief Executive Officer of Neighbourly, that's Steve Butterworth. How are you, Steve?
I'm well. Good morning to you.
Good. So talk us through this particular thing, because clearly with one in five children in the United Kingdom living in food poverty, that's not really an acceptable situation for any country that claims to be developed.
Absolutely not. And obviously there was a problem there before this pandemic kicked off, but further exacerbated by what's gone on over the last year. I mean, it really is, as you say, unbelievable that for one of the wealthiest economies in the world to have that sort of statistic. And so, you know, fantastic that Aldi want to do something about it. And as you say, pledging to donate 10 million meals to families in need via Neighbourly's network of local charities, you know, is a wonderful initiative.
Now, the strapline for Neighbourly, of course, is where businesses help local good causes. I would have thought this is actually an excellent way of ensuring that local businesses can help their communities, which is going to be, you know, very beneficial both for the businesses and obviously for those most in need.
Absolutely. If 2020 has helped us understand more than ever the importance of community, then looking ahead, that community spirit needs to be maintained. And there are obviously multiple stakeholders that have a role to play there, and businesses are an integral part of our community. So to the extent that they're able to play their part, whether through it's the donation of food, whether it's time through volunteering or financial donations, having happy and healthy communities is obviously a massively important part of how we build back better and together in the years ahead.
Aldi obviously currently working with Neighbourly with respect to this. It's an ambitious target, 10 million meals. I mean, it sounds a lot, but I mean, in the scheme of things, is it manageable? Is it achievable? Or is it one of those moonshot approaches?
It's definitely a bold pledge. They have a track record for donating surplus food. We've been working with them for a couple of years now, but there's no doubt that they're looking to double down on their efforts in 2021. And I think their way of using this short animated film they created to put a face to the concept of the hunger in the form of a little animated monster, which is then obviously narrated by Marcus, you know, which is going to really help people understand and better relate to what the problem is. So that bold target they've set themselves is something that I think they're going to see a lot of support for, both, you know, internally and also through their customers.
And that's a really critical aspect, Steve, of course, because we talk about the animation, the hunger monster, because I think some people still tend to think, oh, well, you know, you're just going to have to tighten the belt a couple of notches, you're going to have to cope with that side of things, etc. This is obviously a real problem with, obviously, jobs, homeschooling, all sorts of things that we're faced with in current times.
I wish that tightening the belt was the solution, but unfortunately, as you say, this problem is a real issue. And if you look at food security is an outcome of poverty, a word that you almost wouldn't necessarily see as being synonymous with the UK, to your point earlier about the fact that, you know, we're a first world economy. And yet you've got these issues around families being able to put food on the table. And what we need to try and do is help these local good causes provide not just that food on the table, but also be able to provide the wraparound care and wraparound service that enables their users to be able to get back on their feet, whether it's tackling unemployment, whether it's tackling debt problems, because, you know, ultimately what we've got here is a poverty issue rather than just a food poverty issue.
And we've seen, obviously, recently, as we mentioned, the inadequate nature of some of the foods that were being distributed, etc. Will Neighbourly be keeping a kind of quality check on Aldi and vice versa, just to ensure that the quality of these meals is actually up to spec?
We've always had a fantastic working relationship with Aldi. They've been fully invested in this programme now for a couple of years and very much, you know, engaged at that local store level. So you've got over 900 stores in the UK who've been donating their surplus food on a daily basis to local good causes. And staff absolutely take pride in making sure that the quality of that food that is being donated, you know, is of a quality and has obviously got somewhere ever possible a balance in terms of the fresh, nutritious and healthy contribution as well. So I think for Aldi, this is very much business as usual and integral to the way that they operate. And obviously what's just happened with this whole food puzzle debacle is it's heightened the awareness of how important the role of an organization like Aldi is in being able to support their local communities.
As Chief Executive Officer, obviously Neighbourly, you must be quite pleased actually, Steve, with how the platform has developed, because I mean that onset of actually helping businesses make a positive impact in their communities by donating volunteer time, etc. It's almost like a virtuous circle, really. I mean, are there sort of moments where you actually think, yes, it's good, or are there sometimes where you think it's even too much for us to actually cope with the kind of challenges we're faced with?
There are, as you say, massive challenges out there. I think Neighbourly would take the view that, you know, we brought the platform to life to connect businesses with thousands of local good causes. There are over 15,000 that are on the platform, and we are playing our part in helping to facilitate that. It's so multifaceted, the support that's required, and I absolutely applaud the, you know, the thousands of charities, the millions of people who volunteer their time and make these donations on a daily basis to help support our communities. So looking at the way that, you know, we've got this mountain to climb in the years ahead, it's only going to be through pulling together that we're able to achieve that. And Neighbourly has a role to play. Blatantly, it's not the only piece to the puzzle, but no doubt the fact that we have this heightened awareness of community, that we've got this sense of community spirit that people want to maintain, want to build on, is really exciting. And I think that is the silver lining to this, that it was a recent survey that came out talking about people feeling connected to their communities in a way like they've never done before. And that's a hugely positive move. And I guess a little bit of a retro step in that respect. And wonderful to think that in our ability to understand what's happening in our communities, our neighbourhoods, and help to sort of look after people is an integral part of the way we want to be moving forward.
And is there a location you'd recommend people to actually go to find out details about this Aldi initiative? Or would you just point people directly to neighbourly.com?
I would absolutely suggest people go to aldi.co.uk/hunger, firstly to see the animated film, because it's truly wonderful. But equally then, you can also make a donation there through to the Neighbourly Foundation from that Aldi website, which would be a great help.
Chief Executive Officer of Neighbourly, Steve Butterworth, huge thanks. Keep up the excellent work, Steve, and all the very best to you, good self, as the months go by.
Thank you, Alex.